This is Phil Farron, and I am driving home. It's Thursday today, but I am playing hooky from work, so I can't remember if... I think I talked about this last week. I'm looking to back up. I actually had dinner with a buddy today, so I'm driving home from that, so I'm actually getting away later than I usually do. Come on, come on, come on, come on, come on. There's a car behind me. So I'm at a restaurant and I'm heading home. And, this is going to take a while because there's a couple of people trying to get out. I'm heading home at this point. So it's actually about 7 o'clock in the evening, which usually I head home about 4:30, 4:45. And I have light. So I'm actually, don't have much light at this point. So we'll see how this goes. I know what the topic is. I kind of know what the parameters are. I think we'll be okay. Anyways, I took a writing vacation this week because I had looked, I may have mentioned this last week, I had looked and there were 4 Monday through Thursdays already I had completed in February. And after this week, there's 4 Monday through Thursdays still to come, which means I've got 4 weeks. I've got 4 days. In each of those 4 weeks, 16 days, 8.5 hours a day, done and done. Got budget covered. So I thought, well, I'm behind on my book anyways. Maybe I'll just take a writing vacation. And I got to tell you, I think I could get used to this. You know, some people, when they retire... they don't really quite know what to do with themselves for a while. They quickly find things to fill the gaps and things, but you know, they can get to the place where when they retire, they don't know what to do with themselves. But I can assure you that is not going to be a problem for me. Because I have so much to write. I could start writing full-time today, and I probably still wouldn't get it all done before I died. Because I have certain series that I know that are in queue that I'm going to work at, but then I kind of have the extended director's cut, you know? like I've done Farforth Fables, the first 3 books. I've done that. But I've got like 6 books queued behind that, where I know I've got 6 more books to write there. I know I've got another Still Whispers book that I want to write that is on the Lord's Prayer. And these are sort of the out there projects. I'll get to them if I have time. I've got the rest of the stuff that's queued up much closer in. You know, the That Faded Shore stuff. I got to finish up the Sun, the Wind, and the Rain series. There's just stuff to get done after I get this 24-book series done. So I don't have any trouble retiring and then filling all that up. So this week, I've just been getting up, and the goal was every day, put down 3,000 words. Which is a non-trivial amount to put down. It's still not as good as Anthony Trollope, who's my hero. He used to put down 2,500 words in 2.5 hours. That's cranking. I've had short bursts where I've done 1,000 words an hour. But it was in a section I knew exactly what was coming. And it was a very interesting section to me. And yeah, I've pounded out 1,000 words in an hour, which is that rate. I mean, he's basically doing 250 words every 15 minutes. So that's fast. And that was before a typewriter, I think, too. So he's writing it out by hand. Woo! Woo! But yeah, I'm a fast enough typer, I can get there, but I can't get there consistently like he did. I'm working on that. So, you know, right now, 3,000 words a day, by the time I read through what I've written the night before and then, or the day before, and then coming back to it and writing, like, I think I got started today, oh, somewhere around 10 o'clock on new writing. Got started somewhere around 10 o'clock on new writing. Knocked off about 4:15, and I had taken, through the day, I had taken about an hour break. You know, sometimes you just got to get up and walk around a little bit and kind of refresh your mind. And so I'd say probably 5 hours-ish or so, 5 hours, 5 hours and 15 minutes, solid writing. You know, 3,000 plus words. So that's not too bad. That's not too bad. You know, I'm cranking. Actually, today it was almost 3,500 words. So, you know, if we say that we did that in 5 hours, you know, we're looking at 700 words an hour. Not quite to 1,000, but, you know, not too bad. Not too bad. So it's been fun. It's been good. Enjoyed it a lot. So nothing to report on work. I am heading into the epilogue tomorrow for book 4, Windfall, A Seed in Secret. Gotta see if I can land the epilogue. I think I have an idea that will work, but gotta see if I can land it. If I can land it tomorrow or Saturday and then start my read-through on Sunday, that will be spectacular. I'll be right back on track for an April, early April release for the beta. So I'm encouraged. I am encouraged. So anyways, writing going good. Of course, I've got to turn around in April and start again. I'm trying to get my taxes done simultaneously because I was thinking, okay, in the evening, you could work on your taxes. And I thought, yep, I could. So maybe if I can land the epilogue early, I can swing off and work on my taxes. But we'll see how that goes. Got to start putting together material and, you know, gathering all the pieces for that. But we'll get it done. Step at a time, we'll get it done. Today, came across an article, and it got a lot of play, interesting article, about Earth's uniqueness. It's an interesting new study that was done. I've talked about the three waves of science before. How the first wave is just general observation, external, high-level observation, where God doesn't seem that spectacular. We see his fingerprints in nature, and we think, oh, yeah, but that's no big deal. I can make a clay model. I just can't make it move. That's no, you know. And then we get a little farther, and we begin to see the complexities, and we begin to see the awesome way everything interacts, and the physical scope of the universe, and all those things make us feel very small, and therefore we push God away. And then the final wave is when we realize that this is so beautifully balanced that it becomes more and more difficult to believe that we are not unique, that we are not amazing. Well, what this article is talking about is this new study that has been done. Because if you go all the way back to Galileo, the predominant idea at the time was that the universe was the center, or the Earth was the center of the universe, and everything revolved like giant spheres around the Earth. And, of course, Copernicus came along and said, no. We're actually part, you know, the planets are revolving around the sun. The Earth is one of those. And then later we figured out that the sun is actually revolving around the Milky Way galaxy, and that we're just one galaxy of 100 billion galaxies, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And the universe is just massive, whatever it is, 13 billion light years across or something. And there's just everywhere you look in space, everywhere you point the Hubble telescope, even in the darkest dimmest corner of space. You just point it there and leave it for a while, and you see that there's just uncountable galaxies. And because of that, then people started saying, well, there's just got to be a lot of planets. There's got to be. And there's got to be a lot of habitable planets out there. It just has to be. Just look at the numbers. And that held for a while. But what this guy has done, and of course there's going to be various opinions about all this, but what this guy has done is said, okay, now that we have all these exoplanets that we've discovered, and now that we've guessed that there are rocky planets just like Earth close in, what does this tell us statistically? Because at first, when they started pointing their telescopes and looking for these light variations, and that's really how Kepler does it. There's this telescope called Kepler, and they point it at stars and things, and they just, it takes in this wide field, and they study the stars out there, and they look for drops in light intensity, periodic drops in light intensity, and based on those, based on the periodicity of it, and the amount of drop, they estimate how fast the planet is going around that star and the mass of the planet as it goes around the star. And in fact, they have found planets in the habitable zones. And so just running a back of the envelope calculation based on that, then they say, okay, well, look, you know, such and such a percentage of stars that we look at, they all have habitable planets. It just seems like, you know, come on, it's like, what, 30% or something like that, and there's 100 billion stars in, you know, our Milky Way galaxy, and so there must be 50 million, whatever. They run all the numbers down. What's different in this new study is the guy actually took all those planets that had been discovered, and there is a limited number of them, but it's a fairly respectable data set. He took all those planets that were discovered, and he factored in whether they were in the habitable zone or not. He factored in their size, found out what was typical for what we were seeing. And in fact, according to his calculations, Earth is an outlier. And by that, I mean that it's smaller than a whole bunch of the exoplanets that have been discovered. And as he started running these calculations, he actually came up with this thing that it was some unbelievable number. I'll pull it out when I actually get in the garage and I can see my notes. But it's some unbelievable number that, if I remember right, basically comes down to Earth is unique. Of all the millions and millions and millions of rocky planets that are probably out there, Earth is unique. And if it's not unique, it is really, really, really special. This beautiful, beautiful planet that we live on is really, really special. And why this is interesting to me, my just own personal view of what God did, I think it takes just as good a design to start something and then just let it go for a while and watch it do fun things as it does to speak things into existence in 6 days. The literalist, 6 days. If people want to believe literal 6 days, that's fine, but it's not a requirement for me. And I think it's just as fun to think about the fact that God may have slung the universe into existence, spoke it into existence, let there be light, ba-boom, and then waited 4 5 billion years, because to God, what is 4 5 billion years? What is that? Nothing. It is nothing. And after 4 5 billion years, and he's got this massive universe with 100 billion galaxies in it. Getting my mail. One moment. 100 billion galaxies in it. And each of those galaxies have 100 billion stars in it. And there's a gajillion planets out there, that he looks across all of them and he goes, hey, look at that. There is this gorgeous little planet sitting there, and it's got a moon that is in exactly the right spot so that when there are total eclipses, the moon, its diameter is 1/400th the diameter of the star. And it also happens to be 1/400th the distance from Earth to the star. And that means it just so works out that when there is I'm backing into my garage. When there is a total eclipse, there is, in fact, a perfect match for the moon and the sun, so that you can see the corona. And the corona is very important. I'm going to wave my hand to get the lights on. What am I on? Because we have one of those sensors. So if I wave my hands... I need to change the light bulbs in my garage door because we got those LED light bulbs that don't burn out for 7 years. Guess what? Anyways, so I'm a fan of that theory. The guy went boom, came back 4 or 5 million, billion years later and went, there it is. Let's do that one. Then stuck his finger in the soup, got things started, waited some more until... we got something that's close to human, close to what he needed, because he had started it with the DNA, so he knew where it was going to migrate to. And then he went down and went flip, 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 all the human accelerated regions, and wham, creates a human being that's capable of knowing him, and then everything took off. Anyways, so the conclusion of this guy, this astrophysicist, Eric Zachrisson, from Uppsala University in Sweden, is that Earth may be a 1 in 700 quintillion type of place. That's a 7 followed by 20 zeros. And I am home now, so I'm not going to go through the rest of this, but basically that's the gist of it, that once they started factoring in the exoplanets and what they were discovering with the exoplanets and saying, how are they similar to Earth? How are they different from Earth? What is the percentage of anything that we're finding that's similar to Earth? Once you factor in all the rest of the stuff, that in fact, most planets, according to this article, most planets in the universe shouldn't look like Earth. His model indicates that Earth's existence presents a mild statistical anomaly in the multiplicity of planets. Most of the worlds predicted by his model exist in galaxies larger than the Milky Way and orbit stars with different compositions, an important factor in determining the planet's characteristics. His research indicates that from a purely statistical standpoint, Earth perhaps shouldn't exist. So now they say, well, we need more data. We have to look at this. But they conclude the article by saying, nevertheless, the researchers are confident in the broader implications of their model. Earth is more than your garden variety planet. So there you go. Isn't that interesting? This is Phil Ferrand, and I have made it home.